Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Quite the mood music, Tyler. It's are we trying to set a mood, set a scene here? Tyler is quite the romantic. This is not Saturday Suckage.
Probably should have listened to this one a little bit more clearly.
Okay. Well, listen to this. Before Chicago takes on San Francisco, tune in tomorrow morning, 9 to 11:45 for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Olin Krutz, Patrick Manley, and Mully will get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game, they'll have instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Sony Pictures Wonderverse Chicago and TimberTech Decking and Railing. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. I was talking earlier about Eberflus's failure to read a room, read a game, self-scout his coaching style, and his coordinators, to a point where one of them, where the players had to go and explain one of them, hey, be a coach. And one of the guys they considered for that position, Thomas Brown, didn't make it, but he was given the title of passing game coordinator. And that was like 3 weeks ago. And now he's the head coach and he's going into San Francisco with a chance to get a win in his coaching debut. And his coaching debut comes in under, well, sometimes curious circumstances, but he seems like a guy who's well-rooted in whatever may come at him. So how do you view, Hub Arkush is my guest. Hub Arkush is here on The Score on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Your view of Thomas Brown now as the guy making the calls, as the head coach, running the offense, and all of this chaos and tumult, Hub, he sounds like a guy who's well-rooted, but a guy capable of having a team or at least an offense soar as he directs it. What do you think?
Well, I think we have to see what happens in the next 5 weeks, obviously. What I've seen so far in the last week is I am impressed with the way he carries himself. I am impressed by his confidence. I am impressed with the fact that he does seem ready, for this challenge, but we haven't, seen any work done yet. And so we'll learn a lot more tomorrow, obviously. And I think that, listen, they had no choice, Steve. They had to fire Flus, and we've been talking about this for a year and a half now. The bottom line is that I absolutely think they needed to bring him back this year after the way he finished last year. And at the 2-4 start, it looked like, gee, maybe this is going to work out. 0-6, but especially the last three games, the loss of those last three games, and then the last one in particular in Detroit. I've never seen anything like those last 32 seconds. And the fact that we've gotten even less comfort, or got, I should say, less comfort or explanation afterwards, it was time. You know, I'm not sure if they're better off, you know, having just bite the bullet and wait till the end of the season to make the change or do it now. But you do get these 5 weeks to check out Thomas Brown. Now, I'm not sure that Thomas Brown was the only choice in the locker room to be the interim head coach. And you know, assuming he was, it would make sense to get, you know, 4 or 5 weeks to find out what he can do. But at this point, he's been impressive in his introduction. He's been impressive in how he carried himself this week. And I'm really excited to see what happens tomorrow. And then we'll have a much better, you know, at least opinion of what we've got.
So are you saying the locker room would have a different choice as a head coach than Thomas Brown? And if so, who?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that at all. I don't know what the locker room's choice would be. Oh. I'm just saying that, you know, it wasn't a well-known staff of assistants. You know, I mean, Flus wasn't the best-known head coach in the NFL.
Right.
And so we just didn't know who was going to be most likely to step up. You had to assume it was going to be an offensive or defensive coordinator, and the fact that it was the second offensive coordinator of the season, you know, makes you wonder a little bit. But at the end of the day, he was their clear choice as offensive coordinator to take over when they decided Waldron had to go, and that, by the way, was the right move at the right time, too. And so, you know, no, I have no problem with him as the interim coach. I just don't think we really know much about him as the interim coach yet.
The players seem to be talking about his plainspokenness, and he seems to show that. He backs it up with what we've all seen in press conferences, news conferences. And the players have also said, there's something else that you and I have talked about regularly, that I don't see how they... That week after the Washington game is when I believe that this, so much was exposed about players backing or not backing the coach. The fact that they were angry that the coach said it was execution, which is, like, I confess, they did it. They're responsible for it. And the players saw him, heard him take no accountability for, like, say, the play before the Fail Mary and not seeing what Stevenson was doing. So you and I have discussed whether he lost the locker room there or how it showed out, and you were pretty consistent and insistent that you hadn't seen signs of it or heard of it, and yet it sounds like now more of that stuff's leaking out. Are you hearing that? Do you believe that? Has it come out in a different way for you?
You know, I'm there almost every day, and this is the reason, so that I can hear and see what's actually happening and what's really going on. And I can tell you that until last week, until the Detroit game, he absolutely had not lost that locker room. There is no way that a team performs and turns around in the second half and competes the way they did the last 3 weeks if they've lost the coach. And they'll trust me, they lost the locker room. They were playing some of their best football in the second halves of those games. You know, it doesn't matter now whether he had or not, but if people are interested, I can tell you he absolutely did not lose the locker room until the Lions game. But he did lose the locker room in that game, and that's why that was when they had to make the change. And so that timing of the decision that it was over, I'm fine with. You know, now whether they should have bit the bullet and waited a few more weeks or not, I don't know. I'm not saying they should or they shouldn't. I don't have I can't answer that. You know, we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks whether there's any benefit to Johnson getting these weeks or not. But, you know, Steve, I try and be careful with this because we're in this business, and I just am really unhappy with the way the media in Chicago is handling sports these days and has been for the last year or two. And you know, people don't seem to understand the difference between reporting facts, reporting the information they're getting, reporting what's being told to them, and reporting their opinions. And what you're hearing with a lot of these folks who want to insist that he had lost the locker room weeks earlier, that's their opinion. And I think they're incorrect in it. Again, we're both 50-50 when we have opinions. But at the end of the day, does the past really matter? I think the only part of the past that really matters is who's in charge now. Is Ryan Poles in charge? Is Kevin Warren in charge? Is George McCaskey in charge? It's one of the three. And if it's not Ryan Poles, then I think things are going to probably get worse before they get better, because he's the only football guy of the three that I just mentioned.
I was going to bring that up, and what you thought of that press conference. I thought Kevin Warren neutered his general manager, and I thought that Kevin Warren should be doing his job before he starts trying to do Ryan Poles' job. What did you think of Monday? And what do you think of the power structure? Who's in charge?
We don't really know, Steve. That's what frustrates me. I mean, you know, Warren did a great job of talking around it. He certainly made it clear that he has plenty of power. But also, one of the last things he said was, you know, I'm sure that you know, Ryan and I will agree on the head coach. If we don't, he did say Ryan will have the final say on the head coach, you know. But even that, he didn't say it in that way. It was in such a way that you wondered, did he really mean what he said? You know, so at the end of the day, we have a lot more to learn about Kevin Warren. You know, you look at his history with the Vikings, and nothing good happened on the football side there. They did get a new stadium built, and I think that's the main reason he was hired. But in the year and a half or two, that whatever it is that he's been here, I think he's kind of messed that up a little bit. I think he's made it further away rather than closer. Now, again, I don't understand politics in Chicago or Illinois, so I can't say that for a fact. But that, I'm convinced, is what he was hired for. His football background is non-existent. And so, you know, now he is evaluating his general manager. He is the president of the team, and he is the one to evaluate whether Ryan Poles is doing a good job as a general manager and as a good football guy. But if he starts getting involved in the football stuff, then I think you're going to have the exact same mistakes made that the Bears have made every time, you know, in the last however many years.
And it resounds in my ears where Ryan Poles went on Pat McAfee's show and said, we were brought here to break the cycle, meaning him and his administration, Ian Cunningham, we weren't going to, and here they are, not only perpetuating it, but here's Kevin Warren continuing it. It looks like the mismatched things we've seen, where this team president doesn't have that general manager, this GM doesn't have that coach, this coach doesn't have his quarterback. It looks like the same thing. We've all seen this movie before. And what's different about this?
Well, what's different about this, it's not really different, but what is the problem with this is, again, I'll repeat it, Kevin Warren has no football experience. So him being the one deciding whether he has the right general manager or not, I'm not overly comfortable with. Now, we'll see. We got to give him a chance. You know, he hasn't hired one yet. And so we'll see. And I don't know that he'll have to hire one. I still think Ryan Poles has done more good than bad. You know, it's interesting to me how everybody is reacting to both Monday and Friday, because what was the clearest to me wasn't about Warren or McCaskey. It was about Poles and how uncomfortable he was. And I, again, I can't say that I know this for a fact from Ryan, but I don't believe he wanted to fire Flus this weekend, you know, and he was uncomfortable with what was going on. He was uncomfortable with the way he looked uncomfortable, I should say, with the way it was being handled. And that's why I'm, you know, a little uncertain about what's coming next. But in reality, what's coming next is just the next five games and seeing the job that Brown does. That's all that really matters right now. So until, you know, we see that, we have to wait a little bit to decide what's the next most important thing.
You'd think he was uncomfortable because he didn't want to fire his choice of coach, as opposed to being dragged out to be publicly neutered by the team president. When the team president says he's going to be our point man on a coach search, the GM's always the point man on a coach search, which was embarrassing. It's like patting him on the head and giving him a cookie. That's what I read into the body language. Where do you trace it to that you're not sure he wanted to fire the guy he chose as coach and saw it go so wrong on Thanksgiving?
Well, point man couldn't have been the two worst words any more than they were. I mean, the two right words were final say. And he did finally say that about 10 minutes later, but he didn't say it in such a way that it was believable. Now, why do I think, you know, Poles seemed uncomfortable? I don't know. I'm not going to start giving my opinion when I just criticized too many of the other members of the media for giving opinions instead of facts. I know from being there and seeing him, he wasn't comfortable. But what the reason was, that I can't say. I know from what he said and what I've heard that he did have his doubts about, you know, whether it was the time. Maybe it was just the time to fire Flus as opposed to whether to fire him or not. Because, again, after watching that Lions game, you know, I've been called, you know, the Flus, you know, contributor and whatever. And that game, those last 32 seconds, that ended it for me. I've never seen anything like that. And they had to get, you know, they had to understand from that moment that they didn't have the right guy as the head coach. But the timing of it was a question. We know how the timing of Friday was handled, that he was allowed to give him, to go on the air and say, I'm getting ready to coach the Niners, and then find out an hour or two later he was being fired. How could that have been handled any worse? You know? And so that's why I think we're all, you know, probably as much frustrated as comfortable coming out of these changes this last week.
So I don't know if it's too early to take the pulse around the league, but the way the Bears handled it, what they did to their existing coach, no potential coach would want that done to them. And the way the team president neutered the general manager, if you're a top candidate, if you're Ben Johnson, if you're a top candidate in this hiring cycle, what would make you want to come here? Wouldn't that run you off if you have any, if you put any stock in strong ownership and management, so you'll be support, not just supported, but you'll have a basis in, I mean, if you're Mike Tomlin, you want the Steelers job because originally you wanted a job for sure, but that's a family that sticks with their guys. That's strong management, strong leadership. The McCaskies are the opposite of the Rooneys. So if you're a top candidate, wouldn't that run you off? Is there talk around the league about that? Like, what are they doing there?
Well, it could run you off the league, but the talk around the league, and this is where I get back to the difference between facts and opinions, is I'm, you know, obviously I've been talking to everybody I can all week long, and I'm talking to some GMs, a couple of head coaches, and then a lot of other, you know, people who I trust in the media. And the one thing that everybody agrees on is the Bears head job will be, if not the most, you know, popular job, one of the most popular jobs this offseason. It's going to be a good job for a new head coach or even a second-time head coach because of, it looks like you may have your franchise quarterback just evolving right now and getting better every week. You definitely have the talent on the roster now to compete in 2025 for playoffs, which you definitely didn't have when Flus took over. You had to start a complete rebuild. You don't have to do that now. And I think that the head coach I want to hire, the good head coach, is going to understand that if he is the right guy, then he can handle both the McCaskies and handle Kevin Warren, then he can, even if Warren, you know, is in charge and says he's in charge and wants to make final decisions, the right head coach can work with that and can handle that if the rest of it is all good. And the rest of it, much like at the start of the season, still is all good with the Bears from what we've seen so far. I mean, look at those three games. Those were three of the best teams in the league, all of whom they had and should have beat. You know, and that's the team that somebody is going to get to take over as the head coach now. And so that is a positive. Yeah, there are these other negatives that we're talking about that you worry about. But the right guy, you know, who understands that can also handle that. And so I still have confidence that they can get a really good coach if they pick the right guy.
Do you have a choice of who the really good coach is? Who should they pick?
Well, I believe that there's one very easy choice for me. And that's Bill Belichick. And the problem is, I don't know if Belichick will be willing to work with Ryan Poles and with Kevin Warren. And the reason Belichick didn't get a job last year is because he wanted to, as he has always been, be both, you know, coach and GM. He can't be the GM. He screwed that up the last couple of years in New England. That's why he's not there anymore. He is the best coach in the history of the NFL. And so if you can get the best coach in the history of the NFL, and if you agree with me that I still think Ryan Poles may be a pretty good GM, then I think that puts you in the best spot. You're not going to find a better coach than Bill Belichick, and so that's why it would be my pick. But I don't know if Belichick is willing to accept, working with the family and with Warren. I don't know if he's willing to take it if he doesn't get both jobs, because he wasn't willing last year. Now, hopefully he's learned from that, and he will. And I don't believe he's serious about the college job. I think he's just answering, opportunities to apply. But I do think he's going to be a head coach in the NFL in 2025. And if he has the right mindset to work with Ryan Poles, I think he'd be the best choice for the Bears right now with where that talent is at right now.
Bill Belichick without Tom Brady was, I don't know, Matt Eberflus? He didn't have really good records.
Well, yeah, I mean, their records doesn't make them similar. I say what you're saying, but the reality is that Tom Brady was a huge part of his success. But of the young quarterbacks in the league that you see right now and what we've seen so far, which one do you think may have the best chance to be the next Brady? There's a chance it's Williams, and that's why I think that Belichick might consider passing on needing the GM control and doing this.
Well, he hasn't really been complimentary toward the Bears organization, and maybe he gets over that, and maybe he seizes the opportunity if he can figure out who he's working for, who is what the direct line is. I think that's an issue for a lot of people out there. Well, I love the idea of Bill Belichick coming here, because there'll be, you won't be spending a lot of money on ink to put on your put in your notebook because he's just not. We're on to Cincinnati. There you go. There's your postgame quote.
See, let me just add, though, let me be clear. I'm not saying it's likely or even possible. You know, you asked me who my choice would be. That would be my choice. And under those circumstances, I think it could be a good situation. I haven't talked to Bill in a couple months, so I don't know what he's thinking right now.
Well, he seems in a really good mood for somebody who's not coaching the Bears. And a lot of people who aren't coaching this dysfunction are probably in a good mood enjoying it. Hub, I appreciate your time. Thank you again for the insight.
Talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.
All right. There's Hub Arkush, NFL insider for The Score. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, you know, there's another name, part of the Belichick tree, actually, who's been mentioned in connection with the Bears. So let's take a look. Let's go do some background checking on Mike Vrabel. We'll go down to Nashville where he used to coach. And we'll talk to Joe Rexroad of The Athletic about Mike Vrabel. This is Saturday Suckage. Thank you for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It sucks to lose, Gentry. Did you have another thought or no? I'm just curious. It sucks.
Is that
losing? Awful. That's why I want to win. Because you don't sleep. You want to win for the players that bust their tail. That's it.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Tyler, who was that? Tyler Farengel, who was that?
Mike Vrabel.
Why hasn't he been part of our Suckage roll call?
He will be after this week.
For the love of God, where has that been? He's a natural. We're going to have to take Suckage roll, and Mike Vrabel will be there saying it sucks. And then he'll, or we'll have to cobble together the other part about with the bleep. But thank God you bleeped it. The reason we're talking about Mike Vrabel is because among all the weasel words Kevin Warren uttered Monday, there was a question about a description of what they're looking for in the next coach.
People will ask, what are we looking for in a head coach?
I already said
that.
We
need an individual who has extremely high standards, who is tough, who is demanding, who's bright, who has attention to detail, who seeks and will win championships, who creates an environment of accountability, who's creative, who's intelligent, who's a decisive decision maker, and who will represent the city of Chicago, all of our fans, this franchise in a manner that is well deserved.
Yeah, well, there's Kevin Warren playing to the meatballs. A lot of weasel words there. We want this, we want that. A lot of weasel words and then the whole meatball thing about Chicago, representing Chicago. However, you look at that description and you go, wow, Mike Vrabel kind of fits that. He may not be the only one, but he's one of them, at least the view from the outside. Let's go to find out more about that if we can. We go to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Welcome to the show. From The Athletic in Nashville, Joe Rexroad. Joe, thanks for joining me today. Did that sound like a description of Mike Vrabel to you?
Well, first of all, thanks for the memory of that. That was a great presser that day last year, shortly before Vrabel was fired, talking about losing. That was a fun presser. Yeah, you know, I think the Vrabel, I know the word that gets thrown around a lot with Vrabel is culture. I make fun of that word a fair amount, you know, but I mean, look, I get it. I think that Vrabel is a quote unquote culture coach. And in terms of, you know, I think he's tough. He sets standards, but he also is actually a little bit more of a modern coach than maybe some people realize. Like, he does relate well with players. there is a natural respect level with him because of what he did as a player. I think he's a really good football coach. So, I mean, I think that Vrabel would be is someone that the Bears should seriously look at.
Yeah, culture gets abused around here is a word that Eberflus liked to throw around, and it turned out to be a culture of choking, as we found out. But the thing about Vrabel is he went to the playoffs 3 straight years in Tennessee. The Bears have not done that since Ditka in 84, 85, 86, 87, and 88. And it was Ditka who scared the McCaskies to clutch their pearls and run away from anything that smacks of a big personality. So they want librarians, not barbarians. This is the family that cut out the swearing and hard knocks. That's where they are. And Kevin Warren has an ego like a gas that fills all corners of the room. Mike Vrabel seems like, as well as a good football coach, he seems like a big enough personality to scare the Bears. Is he that or is he not? And what do you base your opinion on?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. You know, he is a big personality. He's a big personality, a big, strong personality. And I think that actually is a big part of why he ended up losing his job here. And obviously it comes down to winning and losing. You know, the roster went through a brutal stretch, you know, really bad drafts with the GM who hired Vrabel here, John Robinson. He got fired midway through the 22 season, and it was sort of like the owner, Amy Adams Strunk, was choosing Vrabel, but then last year she decided to bounce him too. But a lot of that was their own conflicts, lack of communication, and to me, a little bit of Vrabel maybe being too big a personality, you know, with her hoping that he would sort of collaborate better with the new GM, Rand Carthon. That's a really interesting thought in terms of him with the Bears. You know, is he going to come in there and sort of cut away the BS and lay down the law? Did the Bears want that? You know, I think that would be something. You know, Vrabel, when they did fire John Robinson, Vrabel did want to. He wanted to have the same kind of control that one of his mentors, Bill Belichick, had in New England. And that was quickly rejected. But I do think that Vrabel, he imposes his will in any situation he's in. So would that work with Chicago? It probably would be a good thing for the Bears, but would they want that?
Yeah, that's what the answer immediately for me is no, because they rejected it in a lot of different ways. And we just saw a press conference where the team president publicly neutered his GM. Body language told you that. Words told you that. And when you have to go to the trouble of saying the GM will be the point person on a coach search, when the GM is always the point person on a coach search, and the GM can't be out there to announce the firing and what happens going forward, you've got a question of, like, who's really in charge? And Vrabel doesn't seem like a guy who deals well with a lot of complicated issues like that. If he's following what Belichick did and he learned from the master, then it was a pretty direct line, I would imagine. That's kind of what you've described of Vrabel.
Right, and I think that Vrabel in selecting, you know, because I do think he's going to have some, you know, I think he's going to have some opportunities here during this cycle. I think that front office dysfunction is something that probably scares him away a little bit. You know, so I think that's, you know, if this gets to something, I think he's going to need to know, okay, so, you know, how does it work above me here? What's the line of communication and things like that? Because I think obviously there are very fair questions about how the Bears have been doing things by any candidate who would come in. And, you know, of course, you've also got the attraction of being able to come in and coach Caleb Williams, but I think that would be probably a concern for Vrabel.
My guest is Joe Rexroad. He writes for The Athletic in Nashville. By the way, Joe, do you come across my friend Pete Weber much down there?
Yes, absolutely. Pete is an absolute legend down here.
Yeah.
Still going strong, calling the Preds games. Unfortunately, funny, because Pete and I were just at a charity bowling event 2 days ago and talking about the Nashville Predators, probably the – well, they're actually fighting the Blackhawks maybe to be the worst team in hockey this year. So, and that was not supposed to be the case. So tough season, but no, Pete's the best.
Tell Pete Steve Rosenblum said hi. We knew each other in Los Angeles way back then. So is Vrabel, which notable players or parts of the ball, or how did Tennessee get better with him as a coach? Bears fan would want to know, how are you going to make this better if the Bears thought, yeah, they played with some playoff ideas going in. A lot of people thought the weapons were there. The offensive line was not. Defensive line was not. But who got better and how and why and what makes him a coach who would be in demand?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's some misunderstanding with Vrabel, too. When you talk to people who have been in those rooms with him and have worked with him, one thing everybody tell you is, like, this guy is an incredible tactician defensively. I mean, that's what he is. Like, he is, you know, he's, I think a lot of what they did defensively, you know, for one thing they did, if you look at the history of his time, they had incredible success for the most part against Patrick Mahomes. The one time he really got him was he kind of flipped the game around in the AFC Championship game in 2020, and they sort of took over that game in the second half, that of that surprise run for the Titans to the title game. But he's a tactician. You know, he's a defensive guy. He is a motivator, but he's, like I said, guys like playing for him because he does have a player's perspective. So really, he's in some ways more lenient, I think, than you might think of in terms of this big, powerful, menacing coach. But it's a good work environment, you know. So he's a motivator. He's a defensive tactician. I think the criticism of him, you know, I can't blame him for the roster issues that happened. Again, they had three straight first round picks that were just complete zeros. And they traded AJ Brown, and he almost, you know, I mean, the look on his face when John Robinson traded AJ Brown, you can go look it up on the internet. It was almost horror. But I think one fair criticism of him is hiring. You know, he made some not great hires. He had a terrific elevation on his staff of Arthur Smith from tight ends coach to offense coordinator. You know, the Titans were one of the best offenses in the NFL in 2020. Derrick Henry, 2,000 yards. Ryan Tannehill was seriously playing at a Pro Bowl level. They had an excellent offense. And so that was a great decision. But after Arthur Smith took the Falcons job, he failed, in particular, in hiring Todd Downing to be his OC. So, you know, I think it's like, is he too much leaning on, quote unquote, his guys? Does he need to look outside that a little bit? I think that's a fair question. But just even like tactically in game, I mean, he's really good. He won them games and found them points with some sideline decisions. He used the clock penalty thing against Belichick and beating Belichick and Brady in New England in the playoffs in 2020. And Belichick on the sideline screaming about it. It's something Belichick had done to people before. So he knows the rule book really well. He's really good in game. That's another thing that, like, especially after that Thanksgiving debacle, probably Bears fans want to hear.
Yeah, anybody on the sideline who can actually count is something that count to one time out. Yeah, the Bears fans would be thrilled with that. And Bears players would be thrilled with that, as a matter of fact.
Right, yeah, exactly. No, he's a really good coach. You know, his, I think he was 48-37 at one point in Tennessee. And it's not like he... You know, they had incredibly talented teams. They did a lot of overachieving in that time. He ends up 54-45. I mean, it went downhill, but, you know, it's one of the worst offensive lines, which they still have this year in football. And again, just terrible choices. Not that he's completely divorced from those choices. Of course, he had input, but they're a great example of, you know, a roster just eroding quickly in this league.
Joe Rexroth is my guest. He writes for The Athletic in Nashville. But a 269 texter informs me, tell Joe one of your listeners misses him from his time on the Michigan State beat. Great journalist. So I'm passing that along to you, Joe.
Well, that's very nice. I appreciate that. It's been a while now.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It never leaves. It never leaves. Mark D'Antonio might leave, but it never leaves, that reporting on Michigan State. Joe, I appreciate your time. Thanks for the insight on Mike Vrabel today.
Okay, Steve, thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, Joe Rexroth of The Athletic in Nashville. Got some insight into Mike Vrabel. I found that interesting. But he described the problem. Joe described the problem. he promoted Arthur Smith, and they were really good. And the offensive coordinator, when the defensive guy is the head coach, gets another job. He went to the Falcons, and then you got to hire another offensive coordinator, and that didn't work out so well. That's the problem with that. So what if you hire an offensive coordinator? What if you hire an offensive guy as your head coach? He's not going anywhere, right? What if you hire Cliff Kingsbury? Well, let me present some information to you about the guy who's currently coaching Jaden Daniels and the guy the Bears let get out of the room. As a head coach, maybe that wasn't such a bad idea for the Bears to let him go. But we'll discuss that later after this. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage. I suck so you don't have to. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. Top of the hour, we'll do some background checking on Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator of Saturday Suckage roll call. Participant, Josh Allen. Joe Brady is the offensive coordinator there. An offensive coordinator switch in midseason that worked. Find out more about that. But now an offensive coordinator the Bears could have hired. Let get out of the building. He went to work with Jaden Daniels, and Jaden Daniels is having himself a season in Washington. Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury spent a year close to Caleb Williams at USC. Like some consultant title, he couldn't actually be the coach where coaches are, but he was there coaching, consulting on things at USC. That's why everybody thought he was the guy. That's what you do. And maybe he would have been, should have been the guy, but Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles are worried that Cliff Kingsbury would try to take everybody's job. Because before that, he coached the Cardinals and failed rather flamboyantly. His teams died in the second half of the year, every year. In Kingsbury's first season with the Cardinals, 2019, he went 5-10-1. Now, that's better than the 3-13 the year before. But they were 4-3-1. Kingsbury got off to a really good start, 4-3-1. And then they proceeded to lose 7 of 9. In 2020, they improved to 8-8. Kingsbury got to 8-8 by losing 5 of his last 7. In 2021, Cliff Kingsbury and his Arizona Cardinals went 11-6. That's a good record there. They took second in the NFC West. But they started 10-2. Cliff Kingsbury's team lost 4 of its last 5. If you notice a trend, you're right, and it's not a good one. In 2022, Kingsbury and his Cardinals beat the Rams to get to 4-6, which is not really great, but 4-6 before Thanksgiving, you still sort of got a chance, unless you never win another game, which is what Kingsbury's Cardinals did in 2022. And then Arizona dumped Kingsbury. So to recap, Kingsbury's Cardinals went 5-23 at the end of his 4 seasons. They died and died ugly. They found a way to lose at the end. Kingsbury's quarterback threw that Fail Mary, the one that started the fall of Matt Eberflus. Well, something that was obvious to everybody except the people at Hallis Hall. But when Kingsbury's quarterback threw that, the offense, such as it was, they beat the dog breath Giants after that. They went to 7-2. They're now 8-5. After they beat a Titans team begging to be beaten. They've gone 1-3 in the last month. They lost to the Steelers when they failed to score in the fourth quarter. They lost to the Eagles when they kicked a field goal to start the second half and then went punt, interception, turnover on downs, before scoring a touchdown that didn't matter. Then they lost to Dallas Cowboys, getting 3 points in the first half. Yeah, that's a Bears offensive mind. I don't know every detail, every factor, whatever happened in Arizona, why they failed in the second halves of every year after getting off to great starts. I know Caleb Williams has already played for a coach who can't win down the stretch. And Caleb Williams has a right to believe he authored some fourth quarter magic three times. He was leading fourth quarter TD drives, scoring drives of some sort. Whatever the Bears needed, he was directing those. And it looked like it was going to happen again on Thanksgiving, but he found a way not to get it done. But he has a right to think that's what we do here. The coach screwed it up, and now the coach has been fired. I don't know what Caleb Williams' relationship with Kingsbury was at USC. Maybe good, maybe real good. Maybe good enough to overcome Kingsbury's failure when it matters. We'll see. And now I want to bring you another Christmas tune. This is Darlene Love. She's a classic. Christmas time for the Jews.
Well, it happens every year on Christmas Eve. All the happy Christian people take their leave. Yeah, the streets are deserted and that's big news. It's Christmas time for the Jews. Yeah, the holiday party's been about 60 years. Ain't nobody recreated Bethlehem. Yeah, the three wise men, that's a big old snooze. Christmas time for the Jews. They can finally see King Kong without waiting in line. They can meet in Chinatown and drink their sweetest wine. They can drink Barbra Streisand on the street. They cruise. Christmas time for the Jews. They can gang up on the Quakers.
Love Christmas time for the Jews. Let's take a break. When we come back on Saturday Suckage, let's find out about Joe Brady, offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. See if he'd be a viable Bears candidate. Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.